It's Monday, April 12th. No, March 12th, and you're listening to the Geek at Geek News Central, show number 749, sponsored in part by GoDaddy.com. Save 25% on a one-year fourth-generation hosting account by using the promo code CES2. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Hey, folks, I'm on the road. Got a great show lined up for you. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central Podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from San Jose, California. Of course, everyone, welcome to the show. And it's early evening here in San Jose, and been spending the day doing a variety of meetings. Been a pretty exciting day for me, even though I got in early this morning. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But of course, if you're one of our longtime listeners or viewers of the show, thanks for hanging out and staying subscribed. Of course, if you're new to the show, make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Of course, check out our archive podcast available via the podcast link. While you're there, get subscribed to the show. Getting subscribed is real easy. There's a information area there in the second column of the website that allow you to get subscribed to the show. And that way you'll never miss a single episode of the show. If you don't catch us live, you can watch the show on our Tech Podcast channel on the Roku, Boxy, Samsung Smart TV, Google TV. Great way to check the video portion of the show out. And of course, you can reach me on Twitter at Geek News or via email at geeknews@gmail.com or the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Well, I tell you what, got into San Francisco about 7 a.m. this morning. I had a great flight out of Honolulu. I think I was asleep when the wheels were in the wells, and I think I woke up about 5 minutes before landing, so it worked out pretty good. Then fought the traffic down the 101, got into San Jose, got into the hotel, and promptly proceeded to have some meetings this morning, and then it's been pretty nonstop all the way up until tonight. I do want to take a moment here, and I want to thank the sponsors of our show. I want to thank GoDaddy.com for being a longtime sponsor here. We've got some great deals for you here in March. You can get a free private registration with a domain purchase or transfer by using the promo code MARCH4. If you want to get $799.co domain on your first year only, you use COFEB3, COFEB3. And of course, our 25% offer off for GH hosting, use promo code CES2. All the codes can be found and all the specials can be found at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. And all that information is, of course, on the website. There's links there on the website as well. But yeah, got in this morning and immediately, well, basically got into the hotel, took a quick shower, got changed, and headed out. Spent most of the days. I had a 2 o'clock that I had to come back to the hotel here and make a call. Very exciting a meeting this afternoon. Couldn't make for some very large developments in for Raw Voice and everything else on some new distribution deals. So I'm really excited about that potential deal coming together and getting more exposure for our content creators. Now, this past Saturday morning, the Saturday morning tech show was supposed to start at 6 a.m. Hawaiian Standard Time. And I'd had such a crazy week before. My wife, for some reason, she felt sorry for me. And when the alarm clock went off at 5 a.m. on Saturday morning, she just reached over and shut it off and thought, oh, he needs to sleep in, not really realizing that I had a show to do. And about an hour later, when the show was supposed to start, my cell phone started buzzing from my guest saying, where are you at? And I'm like, I'm in bed. So it was really too late because it takes me about an hour to get everything set up and running, and so I just postponed. And we'll do this one next coming Saturday. We're gonna have a great lineup, some new guests on board, so we'll have a Saturday morning tech for you next Saturday. But it was not my intention to miss the show. I think that's the first time I've ever missed a show because of an alarm clock malfunction. But it really wasn't much of a malfunction. It was more of a wife trying to look out for her husband. One thing I am going to be doing here, folks, is I really have been focusing on my studio design, and I'm seeking input from all of you that watch the video portion. Of course, I'm in a hotel tonight here in San Jose, so no background really besides some curtains, and really you're kind of at the mercy of the hotel and where the desk is, and really didn't want to green screen everything, which I probably should do when I travel. But I'm looking for some input from all of you on what you think I should do for my background area behind my head when I'm doing the live show from Honolulu. I've thought about taking those cabinets completely out, putting in a flat screen TV, mounting it back there where we can run some stuff, and then also potentially setting it up so it's easier to set up the green screen so we can green screen stuff more in Honolulu. But really looking for some feedback on what you guys think. Do you guys like the current layout and design of the studio? And love to hear some feedback from you. Of course, we're fast approaching show 750. Next show will be 750. Pretty amazing. We're at that number, but this is show number 749. So next show, I'll be back in Honolulu. We've given some stuff away. We've had basically a contest running here for about the last four, five, six episodes. So you get your last chance to send your comments in. All you got to do is email me, geeknews@gmail.com, put show 750 on it. Tell me what you like or don't like about the show. Or even give me a suggestion on the actual new studio design and what I should do with the background. Another thing you can do is if you write a review for us on iTunes or on the Zune Marketplace or wherever you may write a review for the show, just basically ping me that you have, and we'll put you on in the stack of folks that are actually going to be in the running for a cool prize on show 750. But got a full week here. And one thing that was kind of cool was today during the conference call that I had, and really it wasn't even a conference call, it was a GoToMeeting session. The folks that were in on the meeting, we had some folks from New York, we had a person from Hawaii, had a couple of representatives out of Los Angeles that were on the call, had some pretty heavy hitters, and went through this whole proposal, and we all could basically see each other during the call. It was kind of cool. I had not met at least three of the people that were on the call before, so it was right here in my hotel room using the webcam that I'm using now, and explained to the guys I was on travel here in the valley, and so it worked out good. I made it, you know, really easy to do this first introductory meeting with these guys, and was pretty excited with the results, but really could not have done that without GoToMeeting and the HD Faces implementation that was put, basically has been released with GoToMeeting now for some time. So it really, I think this one meeting just this month alone, being able to do a good face-to-face was probably worth its weight in gold, to be honest with you, and well paid for the very inexpensive subscription cost. So I want you guys to get a chance to try GoToMeeting yourselves. All you got to do is GoToMeeting.com. Yes, go to GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button and use the promo code PODCAST. Use the promo code PODCAST, and we will get your free 30-day trial over there. Definitely appreciate it. Thanks for GoToMeeting for being a sponsor here. Hey, one last thing before we get into the content. I've been getting a lot of inquiries from a variety of different vendors and people to go out to the National Association of Broadcasters show, which happens in the middle of April. Probably why I was thinking about middle of April when we started the show tonight. I haven't decided whether or not I'm going to go out. Maybe looking for a few minor sponsors for that event. So if you've been watching the show and you want to get a good deal and get access to this audience and the audience at GNC, let me know if you're interested in being a sponsor for our event or for my basically going out and covering NAB. Won't be a big grandiose thing like we do at CES, but it'll be me there scouring the floors and looking for cool stuff that's being announced. And anyway, I want to go out and kind of have a more relaxed atmosphere. So really, probably be a relatively inexpensive sponsorship, but love to have someone on board if they feel that it'd be a good fit for them. So drop me a line, geeknews@gmail.com, and let me know whether or not you want to be a sponsor for NAB. Did have a just pop this morning, some travel plans. Going to be here, of course, this week in Silicon Valley, heading back on the 15th. Then I will be headed out to Indianapolis on the week of April 2nd. So I'll probably be in Indy that whole week, it looks like. I got a consulting gig out there for that week, so I'm really excited about going out and meeting a new company and teaching them about new media and bringing them online with some of the products and services that we have at Raw Voice. But anyway, looking forward to getting out to Indianapolis. Haven't been out there and stomped around for a while. So definitely that's kind of what's on tap for immediate travel plans. But again, Thursday show back in Honolulu, then the next 2 weeks home, and then potentially out to Indianapolis. So if we've got any Ohana in the Indianapolis area, let me know, and we'll see about doing a meetup when I'm out there again the week of April 2nd. All right, let me go ahead and get into the content tonight. I got a good stack for you here. Let me load up Chrome. And they got a few people in the on the live stream. So those of you that are watching, thanks for being here and coming and hanging out tonight. I saw an article this afternoon, which kind of made me reminisce a little bit. It was over on Engadget, and it basically says, "Bringing wireless to the disconnected, internet tales from the South Pacific." And for those of you that have listened to this show for a long time, you guys know that I spent as much as 7 to 8 years in the South Pacific, living in Guam specifically. Was in Guam during the days when all we really had was dial-up, and when the internet was really just getting ready to kind of kick off. And there was, you know, a lot of pain back in those days in getting high speed. And there really was no high speed. I think the way I was connecting to the internet was I would have a CompuServe account. I would telnet in at like $3 a minute into this CompuServe account. I would hop into several different places within the United States. I could get back and dial into some bulletin boards and was able to download shareware and that kind of stuff. And that's how I kind of fed my BBS that I was running back in the days. But this write-up on Engadget talks about how much of the South Pacific is still really has wireless, I mean, the dial-up speeds, specifically in Samoa. And, you know, it's, I was really kind of surprised that Samoa still is pretty much off the grid from a high-speed perspective. Now, when I was living in Guam, we did have the fortunate that there was fiber that had run between Hawaii and Guam and then Guam to Australia. So there was at least fiber connectivity there, and there was backhaul capacity on fiber. And I don't think that Samoa has fiber up to this point. I'll have to look at some of the undersea cables, but it's pretty sad that Samoa still is on, you know, really they, you know, most of you, what you're carrying around from a mobile device, you're probably getting internet speeds 20 times faster than what they're getting in the South Pacific. So it just goes to show you that there's still a huge, there's huge shortcomings and having, you know, high speed internet. Now, someone has launched a 4G service in Samoa, but, you know, all you really have is access to internal, you know, stuff within the area. And you're looking at these pricing plans that they have. It's just astronomical amounts of money that they're spending. But we'll see what happens over time to the South Pacific Islands that are trying to get higher speed internet. We'll see. We'll see what happens here. But definitely the folks there are still, you know, kind of really back 10, 15 years ago from a speed perspective, which is pretty sad, or maybe 15 years or more. But thank your lucky stars. I remember very much being on dial-up only, and probably many of you do as well. All right, we talked about the ICANN a little bit, and the folks over at TechDirt have followed up with a story talking about, rather than speaking out against domain searchers, the ICANN has now provided a how-to manual. And the ICANN has actually released a document. It's a step-by-step guide for government officials on how to seize, take down, and censor websites. It has sections like a guide for preparing domain orders, seizures, and takedowns, and a checklist of information to submit with a legal or regulatory action. And this is, you know, pretty much opposite of what the ICANN should be doing. But, you know, they have basically given government agencies a roadmap on how to seize domains and take them over. And just goes to show you that here we have, you've got a group that should be trying to protect the internet, and yet here they are writing a guide telling the governments how to do it and providing forms and everything else. It's just pretty discouraging. It really is. And definitely needs some more international, people on that committee for sure. Supposed to be already, but I guess it isn't as much as it should be. All right, there's a initiative going forward in Texas. Lamar Smith, who has been really the crux of a lot of these bills, and he was the main sponsor behind both the SOPA and also a very dangerous data retention bill. He is under attack. There's a number of folks that have been working together to come up with a design for a billboard where they're trying to raise money, as they're trying to raise up to $15,000 to have a billboard put up in the state. Yes, a single billboard. I don't know if this is an effective way to do a, fight this guy or not, but it's basically don't mess with the internet. You know how Texas has don't mess with Texas? Well, they're using that same theme and same graphic motif to have a don't mess with the internet billboard. And but anyway, if you want to support that, their crowdsourcing campaign to raise the necessary $15,000 to do this campaign against, I believe it's Senator Lamar Smith, or one of the two representatives. I don't know if he's a senator or a rep. Little news coming out of South by Southwest, a lot of tweet stuff, a lot of spam in those tweets as well. So be careful if you are, you know, looking at the comment thread going on in South by Southwest commentary. Be careful on what you're clicking on, because the spammers are in there feeding a lot of nasty links to stuff. But sparks are flying over internet privacy at the South by Southwest panel. CNET had sponsored a panel where representatives from opposite sides in the big data privacy debate tangled this prior Sunday over whether a proposed White House privacy bill of rights is necessary to keep Americans safe online. And during the panel, Brian Soka, president of the nonpartisan nonprofit tech policy think tank, argued that states and federal governments might have better results at providing privacy protection for Americans by enforcing existing laws than they would if they added new regulations. Of course, then the ACLU was a participant, a panelist from the Electronic Privacy Information Center was a panel member, and I guess it turned to get pretty ugly. And I'm waiting for a video on this to be put up on the internet, but I guess it was quite the lively debate. A lot of people agreeing to disagree at the end, but it definitely made the news today, and it was being talked about quite a bit. So you can see where the technologists and the legislatures and people involved in government policy issues are really at odds still. And there's not a lot of, there's definitely two divides and not a common ground at all. And they're talking about the harms and so forth that data retention over a long period could do, and talking about privacy that goes along with it. Now, another thing is happening at South by Southwest is, you know, and I've talked about this a little bit. I'm not a basher of South by Southwest, but startups are having a difficult time trying to break out during the interactive show because there's so many companies there that are trying to break out. So actually, investors of these companies are actually counseling their startups not to use South by Southwest as a launching ground because it's such a crowded place for launches. And, you know, this has come a long way from the 2007 show, which actually right now I got my five-year birthday notice from Twitter. So in 2007, when Twitter launched, and it really became one of the most talked about new companies, you know, it really put them on the map. And so companies have tried to use South by Southwest as a launching ground, and they've had a very, very difficult time. So 66 startup companies are entering a two-day technology accelerator program at South by, allowing to pitch themselves to live audiences. And then they had over 670 startups apply. So really kind of hard to break out when you're one of 66 and you're trying to get seen at the event. So love to hear any tips from you guys. If you hear anything cool about a new startup that doesn't make the wires, love to have you email me here at geeknews@gmail.com and let me know what you're hearing online. NASA is projecting that they're going to need the Russians a lot longer than what they originally thought. So NASA is drafting backup plans to prolong the use of Russian spacecraft for ferrying astronauts to the International Space Station. And they feel that they may not be ready in 5 years due to budget concerns and private industry. They just don't know if they're going to be able to make it in time. So that is kind of what's up on the NASA front at this point. So we'll see where this heads as time moves forward. I saw a real interesting video today, and it was actually linked off of the Extreme Tech website, extremetech.com. Of course, I have all these links up in the show notes for you at the end of the show today. But Chris Prillo had his father play with Windows 8. And this is a very telling sign on how real people are going to be using Windows 8. I think all of us with a technical background are going to be able to understand how to use Windows 8. We're going to be able to navigate it. But Chris Brillo's father had a very difficult time in finding different locations for programs, and you can see the agonizing example of why Microsoft shouldn't have removed a design element that users, especially older users, have relied upon for almost 20 years since Windows 95. And if you sit and watch this video, you can feel his pain, and he's trying to figure it out, and he can't. And that's very telling. I think Microsoft's got a big problem on their hands with this new version of Windows 8 coming out. And for any of you that have taken any time to play with it, it is weird. I don't know if I really care for it that much myself. All right, moving on to different topics here. Symantec did a study on what happens when you lose your smartphone. And this is pretty troubling. They deliberately lost 50 phones in four U.S. cities and also in Toronto. The devices were placed in a variety of locations in heavily trafficked areas. And using tracking software, Symantec then monitored each phone's activity and location. 89% of the phones recorded attempts to access personal information, with photos being the most common single feature accessed, over 72% of the time. On the corporate side, 83% of the phones had these types of files accessed, with nearly half attempting to log in through a faked remote admin app. In total, all but two of the phones had some type of data accessed, according to the report. Now, this is even more scary. While some attempts believed to be in a good, believed really kind of as a people's curiosity, Symantec had placed a file on the phone named Saved Passwords. 57% of the phones had this file accessed 43% of the time. An online banking app was accessed. It was very obvious that people went way beyond probably what would be considered, you know, just trying to figure out who the device belonged to. Only half of the devices saw attempts to by the finder to return the device, even though the device owner was clearly marked within the contacts. Now, you wonder how many of those, half of those devices, how many people are really snooping around at the same time. So this is the recommendations coming out. Is definitely put a hard to guess password on your phone. And the second thing to do is install software that allows you to remotely track or wipe your device. They're saying the tracking will drastically increase your chances of recovery, as you'll be able to track the location of your device and provide this to law enforcement if necessary. And if you're more worried about the data, you can at least remote wipe. While you'll probably lose the phone, at least you can remote wipe the device and get rid of the information. But I guess the main point here is be wary of what's on your phone, just like you would on your laptop that you're traveling with or your iPad and so forth. I'll be the first to admit, I'm pretty guilty. I haven't run a password on my phone in a long time. And after reading this, I got to thinking about it a little bit, and I need to do the same. I need to put a password on mine. I'm just kind of curious, though, how many of you have not. I just find it annoying to have to put the password in. It drives me crazy to have to do that, because I'm usually, having to put that in is just another step, and it slows me down in a busy world. But I guess I'd rather have to put the password in than to lose, a whole bunch of data to someone that shouldn't have it. Well, Kim.com is making some comments. He has basically, from preparing for the case, he has basically been working with the teams that are trying to basically bring the servers back online so people could get access to their private files that they've got uploaded on their photos, documents, and so forth like that. But what's interesting is that many of the site's users were U.S. government officials. And they found a large number of meme accounts from U.S. government officials, including the Department of Justice and the U.S. Senate. So it looks to me like .gov folks were actually using the Mega Upload site to transfer media back and forth between other government agencies. I find that in itself pretty shocking, considering that it's probably outside of the, how you're supposed to use those network or those government systems. I just can't imagine putting a government files on a service like Mega Upload. It's just fraught with, especially if the information's sensitive, it's outside of the government realm. Those folks should be counseled on. They had to get a list of those folks' names and say, hey, what are you doing here? But he finds it very ironic that many government officials were using Mega Upload. Well, Postrus is joining Twitter. Twitter has purchased, acquired Postrus. So those of you that weren't familiar with Postrus was a microblogging site. And so I don't know exactly what that means at this point, but if you're a Postrus fan, it's being absorbed into Twitter, and it'll be used somehow, in some way. So time will tell how that integration works. Moving on to a different topic here, Intel is developing an internet-based television service. Well, who else? We got Apple developing internet television-based service. Apple, Intel, Microsoft. Who's next? I'm going to tell you, folks, it's all about the content. It's all about having, this online media. It's big business. But apparently Intel has been pitching media companies on a plan to create a virtual cable operator that would offer U.S. TV channels nationwide over the internet in a bundle similar to subscriptions sold by cable and satellite TV operators. The TV offering would use Intel technology, and in at least some scenarios under consideration, would use Intel's name in its presentations to media companies. Intel says it's making its own set-top box to carry the TV service, and is demonstrating interface for users to browse programs. So Intel declined to comment on this, but everyone's getting in the TV business. You know, we're going to be able to buy now you're going to be able to buy a computer with an Intel chip in it. You're going to be able to buy a set-top box with an Intel chip in it to get to get your television service for. All right, CNN is said to be in talks to acquire Mashable. And yeah, I think to myself, Mashable's a great site. They have great content. And if they're going to be acquired by CNN, they'll ruin it. They really will. You're going to, you know, each of these networks are known for their own type of reporting. And I don't know. I guess it's all about the money. You know, it really, really is. But it just doesn't leave a good taste in my mouth to think about CNN acquiring Mashable. What does that mean? You know, now it's just a rumor. But, you know, Mashable's been known for covering social media and technology. They recently been covering business and entertainment news. But, they partnered with a variety of sites as well. So we'll see if they get bought up. I guess that's a good sign for companies like mine that are media companies. Time will tell on this one. But the proposed price, I think, was around $200 million. All right, over in Gawker, there's a rebuttal to an article that was written by David Carr from the New York Times. There, David Carr and a couple of other folks are proposing guidelines for content aggregation sites and for bloggers. And basically, they're trying to come up with a blogger standards or bill of rights or requirements. But I think the folks at Gawker sum it up exactly in their post to say, we don't need no stinking seal of approval from the blog police. So, you know, these folks are trying to create a council of ethical blogging and aggregation, which will serve as a sort of trade group or non-binding credential organization for best practices in the blog sphere. But, you know, here you've got a bunch of major media guys that are trying to tell the bloggers what to do, how they can do it, when they can do it, where can they do it. And, I think most bloggers are very good in sourcing the information that they, basically providing links back to source articles. You know, it kind of reminds me today, I got I showed you guys on a prior show, show number 694, I think. I showed you guys a video of a SpaceX animation. And that SpaceX animation had some background music in it that YouTube flagged as a copyright violation. So I submitted a counterclaim saying it was fair use. The folks that did the actual sent the copyright violation to me responded and said that while they support my type of content, that they still felt that because I used the whole video, it wasn't fair use. But, you know, I was talking throughout the video, commenting about stuff, and it just goes to show you anymore. You just can't use anybody's content. You just, you know, everyone is so absolutely anal. You know, I just like when I was doing interviews at CES, I told folks we can't have no background music playing. There's just a whole bunch of stuff we had to be careful of so we wouldn't get our content flagged. And here I am, I'm playing a video produced by SpaceX, which put it up on YouTube, which made it available for people to play. And yet when I report on that video and talk about what their plans are, I get a hit with a copyright violation, even though I'm using it in a fair use standard, linking back to the original video. Of course, the music in there, I'm sure SpaceX probably went and licensed, but at the same time, it didn't cover me, and I should have known better in the long run. So you just like, you know, where's it going to end? And while I don't think the folks are going to fight my rebuttal, I did get scolded by the same group saying, hey, you shouldn't have ads running in your content. And I'm like, well, what do you mean I'm not supposed to have ads running on my content? Well, he says, well, you're not supposed to have ads running in your content if you're on YouTube. And that's not true. Depends on what you've done with YouTube and the agreements you've came to. So it's really an interesting time right now. And, people don't want their content seen. If they don't want us to report on cool videos that they put up and link back to those, I'm fine to stop doing that. But, that's in the end, all of the end users, all of you that consume content, that don't have time to find all this cool stuff that I dig around for you, and you guys lose. I just think it's gotten out of control. So from now on, I have to play just a short segment of some video because I played too much and that wasn't considered fair use. Well, it's not like I didn't link back to the source article. It's just, it blows me away. So, my whole hour and 15 minutes of content's flagged for a copyright violation because of a 20-second video. It's ridiculous. It really is. All right, let's move on to a different topic here. And, let's talk about RC aircraft. And I'm not an RC guy. If I had one of these little RC helicopters, it would last about 3 minutes and it would be crashed. I'm not good at flying RC stuff. But when you see this video that I'm going to link up from Gizmodo, you're going to have to watch this remote control Top Gun pilot his helicopter through some just purely, it looks to me, impossible maneuvers, and you're just going to be, the wow factor is going to go way up. So I have this link up in the show notes. It's definitely one of those must-watch. If we were back in Hawaii and on the other studio, I'd play this for you live because there's no music in it, and I wouldn't get hammered. Maybe I would. I don't know. But anyway, I have the link up in the show notes for you to check out. All right, a little bit scary here. It turns out that Chinese are, specifically Chinese spies, have been friending NATO officials with fake Facebook accounts. Apparently, a huge swath of senior British military officers and defense military officials become friends with who they thought was United States Navy Admiral James Starvitis. And while Starvitis is a real U.S. commander, it turns out that the man behind the Facebook profile wasn't him, it was actually a Chinese spy. So in friending the spy, those British officials obviously leaked their own personal information that includes email addresses, phone numbers, pictures, the name of family members, and possibly even the details of their movements. So, this is one of those things where, like, I often will see a Facebook friend request come in, and because I live on the internet, I'll just go ahead and approve someone. And it should make all of you that sit back and think, especially if you work for Uncle Sam, look at your friend list very, very carefully and see who's friending you. But here you've got the Japanese spies using social media to impersonate people. Facebook complied with the government and helped take those down, but it's too late. They already have your information, and something that folks should go, wow. And it's not surprising. I guess this shouldn't come as a surprise. This is this is what spies do. They try to find information out about people and build dossiers on officials, and they're going to use whatever method possible. The internet just makes it really easy for them to do now. It really, really does. All right, switching topics here. There's a great article in that basically is a NASA article talking about a cluster of stars. And if you've ever seen, I wish I could show this to you online, but there's a massive group of young stars called R136 in the Large Magellanic Cloud, a satellite galaxy of our own Milky Way. But because there's such a huge cluster of them, they're saying many of those are diamond icy blue stars are running among the most massive stars known, and several of them are 100 times more massive than our sun. And they're saying these hefty stars are destined to pop off like a string of firecrackers as supernovas in a few million years. So what they're saying is because they're so close together, that when a couple of the big ones go, it's going to take out a whole swath of stars at the same time. And so, you know, it's one of those things that probably will never happen in our lifetime, but they're talking about how NASA is, you know, this is like an opportunity of a lifetime to see the, you know, most amazing fireworks display ever. But I'm sure whoever's around to see it will get a heck of a show, and hopefully it's not close to us. But anyway, so link up in the show notes on that. All right, there was an article that made the rounds a couple of days ago talking about a police plan to raid the Pirate Bay. So, you know, it's been a while since the Swedish police first raided the Pirate Bay. And again, there's talk of a second police raid against the most famous torrent site. And that the Pirate Bay has learned that local authorities have acquired warrants to take action against the site, and expect both servers and the new SE domain may be targeted soon. So be prepared for the torrent Pirate Bay to go down again. But now that they've kind of shifted to this new ecosystem where you can actually download the Pirate Bay, they say it's easy to move and pretty much bulletproof at this point. But we'll see how this develops if the Pirate Bay gets a hack. Now, there was a good article. Let's see if I can find it. Here it is. There's a new box that you have to build yourself. It's called the Pirate Box, and it takes file sharing off the radar and offline for next to nothing. For about $100, maybe even as low as $50, you can build what they're calling a kiosk of privacy. And what it does is allows you to have an offline copy of the Pirate Bay accessible via local Wi-Fi. And basically, you can run this on hacker meetups and different types of stuff. You can run your own file sharing service, and you basically can do it amongst friends. And so it really means that anyone, anywhere can offer a small file sharing service for just a few dollars. And they just use a specific Wi-Fi device that's capable of taking a external USB stick. But they've got the schematics on how to build this thing. So if you want to build your own peer-to-peer service, you can do so for just a few dollars. And I could see where these would these could become very popular in colleges. So it just looks like a Wi-Fi network that's out there. And when people attach to it, instead of being a Wi-Fi network, it's got its own built-in server, and it runs a web interface. So they can use a USB stick or a hard drive for storage, for sharing the media. So pretty interesting here. And they've got a whole menu system and everything for it as well. So I have a link up in the show notes for you to check out. And they're getting pretty resourceful on being able to pirate stuff. And they primarily built this, they feel, for colleges and college kids being able to share stuff off the radar. All you need is four or five of these in a dorm, and, you know, boom, everyone will be able to share everything. All right, if you live in the UK, there's been some, essentially some groups who have been trying to get a settlement from alleged file sharers in the UK, and they haven't had a lot of success. But now the group, specifically, it's called GoldenEye International. They're back again with a third attempt. The new cases against ISP Telefonica UK was up in the High Court this morning. And he was one of the judges responsible for ordering the ISP-level block against Newsbin 2 and the Pirate Bay. And GoldenEye are seeking a document which, granted, would allow them to identify the target of 9,000 alleged file sharers and demand £700 each from them. So this is up for a decision on the court here, and we'll see what happens with this decision. But this group's once again in the UK wants money from about 9,000 peer-to-peer users. John C. Dvorak wrote an article over on PC Mag talking about the 24-hour Apple TV network. And he says he's completely convinced that a network that did 24/7 all Apple would be hugely successful. And the Apple fanboys are a loyal bunch and would watch this network religiously. Wow. Well, I'm going to tell you, we've got a 24-hour Apple TV network over at techpodcast.com. There's a huge selection of Apple-specific shows over there. And you can get access to all that stuff right there, John. Go over and get subscribed. Now, I know what he wants. He wants to be able to see stuff live on the Internet 24/7. And I just have to think about that a little bit and see what we can come up with. Oh, that's nice. I guess we just went offline. Online. Let me look here. And why did I go offline? Okay. That sucks. What's going on here? Well, the folks that were watching, let's see here. Let's stop the recording there. And I know a way to cycle this. We'll cycle here. And then cycle back up. See if that happens. If that gets me back online. Oh, don't you just love, got to love the folks at Ustream. And I'm sure being here in a hotel is not helping me at all, but I cycled it. Hopefully we'll see if it brought things back up line for the people. There's a number of folks watching the live stream here, and I'll know just in a second if we're back off on the air or not. And sometimes when this happens, it completely locks me out. And while that's coming back up, let's talk just a little bit here about a new tent. Yes, I said tent. Oh, this is not going to happen. Oh, crap. All right, I know a way to deal with this. All right, we'll log off. This new tent is like a hammock. And it basically, you basically hang it between a couple of trees, and you go from there. It's they've got different ones that hold 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people. If you get to the big tents, they come with their own little A-frame. You get a little rope ladder to climb in and out of this thing. You're thinking to myself, Todd, what does this have to do at all with tech? I don't know. I just thought it was cool. And if you're worried about animals, don't forget bears can climb trees. But if you're worried about animals and little crawlers and stuff like that, this might be a tent that you'll want to check out. So I'll have the link up in the show notes for you on that. All right, next thing up is an article over on Lifehacker. You know, many of you moved your clocks ahead. And so if you want to double check the accuracy of your clock, there's a variety of places you can go. You can go to time.is. That's one of the locations where you can get your clock synced on your computer and make sure that you're running the right time. So definitely check that out. Time.is is the place to go. Compares your computer clock to the atomic clock. And I'm just going to click on this real quick and see what happens here. If I go over to time.is. And let's see what happens when you actually load the page. Synchronizing. It says, my clock is 0.3 seconds fast. And accurate synchronization was 0.054. Oh, so they just... Oh, I don't think I'm going to worry about 0.3 seconds from a time speed perspective. But it'll show you how much you're off on your clock. All right, a couple articles over at Geek News Central that I want you to check out. Definitely check out my article on a universal charger called the iDapt i4. This is a great little device. For $59, you can charge up to 4 different devices at a time. Comes with a variety of different device connections, and it helps you get rid of some of that rat's nest. My wife saw this thing, and she's like, that's going on the counter. And she wants me to order one more for the office. So definitely check out my Universal Charger iDapt i4 review. Along with that, one of our new writers at Geek News Central, Jen, she wrote an article talking about where to see a retired space shuttle. So definitely consider checking that out. That's a great article. It tells you where you can go see a space shuttle now that they've been retired. Of course, I was able to see one of the early shuttles at the Aviation Space Museum, or Space and Air Museum out by Dulles. And so they're going to make the transfer of Discovery into the Smithsonian on April 19th. So you're going to see the real dealio there soon. So be aware of that. And it won't be the one that just did the drop flights, but it'll be actually Discovery. But there's going to be a variety of places where you're going to be able to see a shuttle here in the coming months. Great article by Andrew H., one of our new writers at Geek News Central, talked about homeless hotspots raising the hackles at South by Southwest. And if you have read about this today, this is simply ridiculous. What they did was a marketing firm gave hotspots to a group of homeless people in Austin to basically walk around during South by Southwest. And this company called BBH Labs, with offices both in New York City and London, is the brainchild of this publicity stunt where these homeless folks are outfitted with wireless internet transmitters, and then they're dispatched around the popular tech startup. And for a PayPal donation, you can buy internet access for as long as you need. So basically what they're going to do is the donation then would go to the homeless person, hosting the hotspot. So basically the guy has a shirt on that says, "I'm Charles, my hotspot," something, gives a web address you go to. And when they click on that, when you go to that web address and you pay a PayPal donation, it gives you a code so you can get into his hotspot for, they're saying, $2 for 15 minutes of utilization. So this is a way you can, instead of giving money to panhandlers, you can give them money for being your personal hotspot. I understand they're trying to do good and trying to help the homeless out. But this is almost like, having slaves walking around, you know? And it to me, it really is kind of like, ugh. And a lot of folks at South by Southwest have been pretty disgusted with this advocacy effort. And, it is an interesting way, I guess, to help homeless people out. I don't know. Andrew H. Has kind of mixed feelings on it. But I don't know. You know, what do you guys think? What do you guys think about if you were in San Francisco or L.A. and the homeless there were all issued hotspots and you could buy internet access for a couple of bucks via PayPal? But, you know, really, are these homeless people going to be around areas where you're going to need that? I don't know. I understand these big events like South by Southwest, why they're doing it, but it seems just a little bit weird. It really does, at least from my perspective. All right, BMW has launched Stitcher integration at South by Southwest. And there's a cool video, and I think we talked to BMW a little bit at CES. I think we knew this was coming, but I guess they've released it there. So now you can get Stitcher. And of course, you can listen to this show in your BMW now. So if you have a Beamer with the apps in it, you definitely want to load Geek News Central up in Stitcher when you're driving down the road and listen that way. All right, AT&T is continuing 4G LTE expansion, plans to light up 11 markets by early summer. So AT&T is now going to be launching in the following cities: Cleveland, Akron, Canton, Ohio, Naples, Florida, Bloomington, Lafayette, and Muncie, Indiana, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, St. Louis, Bryan College Station, Texas, and Staten Island will get the benefits from those 700 megahertz waves. So those are coming on right in time for the new iPads to be delivered. So 12 new markets with LG. Interesting that Bloomington is a college town in Indiana. And let's see here, Cleveland, Akron, Canton, Naples, a lot of college towns on this list. Bryan College, yeah, so lots, of course, Staten Island is obviously huge population center. But anyway, more 4G coming from AT&T. The iPad that I bought, my wife, is a Verizon LGE. I think we talked about this in the prior show, but the official Roku app has arrived for the Android as well. All right, that's all I've got for regular content tonight. Let me go ahead here, and I've got some emails from some of our loyal audience members. I wanted got an email here from Ron. He says, "Hey Todd, I love your show, and I'm unsure if you would like to help us get the word out. As you remember, as you were recording an episode of GNC, the earthquake hit Japan. About 10 minutes later in the show, we started to see the tsunami destruction happen in the coastline of Japan. During your show, I think I was the one that told you about it. I was called in the chat room. Well, I got teamed up with helping the Toronto street team for a movie called Pray for Japan. This movie is made as this movie is made by Stu Levy. He just happened to be in Tokyo when this all happened and teamed up with a team of people to bring in food and water. He also had his camera on him too, so he started filming and is also helping when there was to show destruction in human spirit. So anyway, to carry on, this is a not-for-profit documentary feature film. This film will be showing at different AMC theaters in the United States and Canada, and there's also a screening in London being set up soon. All the info for the trailer can be found at prayforjapan-film-org, prayforjapan-film.org. Thank you, Todd. And Ron, absolutely, definitely, thanks for the email on this. But again, prayforjapan-film-org. Got an email here from Tim. He says, Todd, I got a bunch of articles for you here. There's lots of interesting ones this week. Laughing out loud. Keep up the good work. He says, NASA takes to YouTube to debunk the Mayan apocalypse. So I have a link up to that in the show notes. He also says, hey, check out the military's new less-than-lethal system may be coming to an Occupy Wall Street protest near you. It's real neat to watch the bigwigs' reaction to the system about halfway through the video. And basically, I watched the video, and I wouldn't want to be subjected to this thing. When you guys see it, if it doesn't creep you out, it creeped me out. Got another link here from Tim. Says setting out on its final voyage, the world's first nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, the Big E, makes its final cruise. And when it gets back, it'll be decommissioned, towed to the shipyard, defueled, and sold for scrap metal. So that is what's happening here with the Big E. So it's on its last cruise. And got an email here from Richard talking about the leaked plan to raid the Pirate Bay. Thanks for that. Got an email saying here from one of our listeners says, I can't prove it in court, but I'm on AT&T's unlimited plan for iPhone, and I know I'm being throttled. However, I refuse to be bullied to change plans and will stand firm. As a Johnny Cash song goes, I won't back down. I hope AT&T gets their sock suit off if possible. Long live non-greediness, if that makes sense. Thanks for that. Got an email here, another one from Tim, saying a story of trust and hate and justice. Talks about the feds and their ebooks are way overpriced and going after some companies. I think we talked about that a little bit on the last show. And he goes, Todd, I don't know if Antarctica counts as a country, but I just listened to show number 746 there. Technically, I listened while traveling between the Russian, Chinese, and Uruguayan bases as a participant in the Antarctica Marathon and Half Marathon, which I did. By the way, bandwidth for the ship satellite link is charged by the kilobit. Thanks for the great podcast, Bob. And I think this is the first time we've ever gotten an email and from someone in Australia that's listening to the show. But hey, thanks, Bob, for being part of the Ohana here. You really made my day. When that one came in, I was like, well, I told my wife, honey, we got someone listening as Antarctica. I don't think Antarctica counts as a country, but it definitely counts on the list of very cool places for people to listen to GNC. So we appreciate your support here. But by the way, how much do you get whacked for listening to the show? I think, you know, anyone that has to pay to listen to this show should become like some honorary fellow or something of the of the show because, you know, if they're charging you by the kilobit, you know, and I have 60, 70 megs for the show, it's got to be a little bit pricey to listen. But it shows pure dedication, and I'm very happy you were listening while on the ice. Very cool stuff. And Bob, thanks for emailing me. And it's got a very cool email address. And it's at oepolar.com. I'm not going to put the actual address out there, but it's awesome. All right, folks, I'm going to make this a wrap for the show. I hope you enjoyed the show here out of my dingy hotel room in Silicon Valley. Got a busy week ahead of me. And for those of you on the stream, thanks for coming in and hanging out. I know we had a little trouble with the stream, but it looks like the video recording is working fine, so there will be a video of this tonight that will go up online. And again, if you got comments on the show, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. You can reach me on Twitter at geeknews. It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for listening and being part of the Ohana here. Until next time, take care and aloha.